welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are giving youth a chance, thanks to oldfootballshirts.com. Well, with Stephen Alzati starting the last three games, and Aaron Connolly not only been given the opportunity to prove what he can do, but actually snatching it firmly with both hands, it seems that there is now well and truly a pathway for our academy players and a manager that is prepared to give them that chance. This, of course, is not something that happens overnight, so we are delighted to welcome back to the studio Albion Academy Director John Morling, and Alan's here as well.
Not quite the Bobby... I'm back.
Yeah, this is true. But John, welcome back to the studio. A pleasure to have you here. Now, for those who didn't hear the show last time, why don't you just tell us a little, who you are and where you come from and what you do?
John Morling, Academy Manager, Brighton and Hove Albion Football Club.
News at 10. So, what do you do over at Lancing?
So, manage the academy. Basically, I would look after the football side and the recruitment side of the academy. Predominantly 23s down, recruitment are split into Paul and Stanley from 17s up, but obviously there's a link in between.
Sure.
And then obviously all the specialist staff would report to their own line manager in their specialist field, so medical would report to Edinburgh.
But you oversee the operation?
Yeah, and the football side and recruitment side.
So is yours a kind of an operational role? Is it administrative, or do you take the training, or what do you oversee?
A bit of everything, really. It would be at most games, 23s, 18s, 16s, cover every age, really, from 9s upwards, at least once a month to see everybody, training. Take some sessions, obviously a coach predominantly, and then obviously oversee the running of the academy, really.
Okay, well, at the top of the show there, I mentioned the fact that we've had Stephen Lazzati start in the last three games, and Aaron's obviously come in and taken that chance as well. We were talking about last time you were in, which we'll touch on a little bit later on. But does that make your job easier, or does the real hard work start now?
It's still our work, but it does make it a little bit easier in terms of attracting players, and it has a massive ripple effect across the whole academy and the players and the staff and the parents and the stakeholders, and anyone to do with youth development, really. As an example, the under-9s, under-11s went along with the 23s to watch the Tottenham game. Great game from obviously to go and watch, and then in the morning the 9s come in, and 9s and 11s come in to play their game, and the little under-9s want to be Aaron Connolly, and they want to do what Aaron did. So it's a brilliant thing, and it affects everybody. But if you're trying to attract players to the club and you've got a true pathway, I think that makes a massive difference.
So he's kind of your kind of poster boy at the moment, is he, Aaron Connolly? I mean, he's certainly not the first one to come through, but, you know, he is the man at the moment, isn't he?
He's the man at the moment in terms of that's what everyone's talking about. Obviously, Stephen's come in and he's done very well. And then you've got a handful of players on loan. Christian's doing really well out on loan. So is Robert Sanchez, two goalkeepers. Ben White's doing excellent at Leeds. Jason Malumbi's doing well at Millwall. We've got two boys in Bundesliga 2 for the first time, Leo and Victor. And then George Cox is doing really well for Tuna Sittard. So you've got Max in as well at Wimbledon. So they're all doing well. So it'd be an interesting summer. Now they've got to obviously push for places in our first team. If not, they might have to go out on loan again or obviously end up somewhere else.
There are some people out there, well, for me, with a little bit of a hair trigger, who are saying that, especially when Florin Andoni and Lacadia went out on loan, leaving us a little bit light up top. And obviously, Graham Potter is keen to give Aaron Connolly his chance. Yeah. And there was a kind of a little bit of a hair trigger saying, well, hang on, how come we're sending so many players out on loan? Why don't we get them back? We need them, you know, and if they were good enough, they'd be out on loan. When a player goes out on loan, what does that say about their part? To what extent is it their part of their career progression?
Well, it's very individual. So you'll pick a club or a manager to suit that particular person and what the needs are of that player at that particular time. If you've got a choice, sometimes you ain't got a choice. And as an example, we send some of our younger scholars out on local loans, and it's brilliant for them to experience something different, or it might be their first introduction to men's football. for some of the boys that have gone out, it's their first loan. For someone like Ben, as an example, he went to Newport first, then to Peterborough, then on to Leeds. So he's had a different journey. And for some players, I know Aaron went out on loan for a little bit and he was due to go out in January if he didn't get injured at Luton, and he went for a month. He's not had too much experience outside the building.
No.
And other players in the club, they might come all the way through and not go out on loan. It's what's particularly right for that player at that particular time, then we'll decide as a management group, really, of what's next for him.
But so, the ultimate aim of the academy is to provide players for the first team.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and now that... I mean, I know you can't particularly talk about the change in manager, but, I mean, from our point of view, it looks like that pathway is a lot clearer than it was. Now... Since you last came to talk to us here, there has been other changes at the club as well. And obviously, Dan Ashworth has come into the club. Yeah. And he's what does his role do, and how does it impact on you?
Well, Dan looks after, he's director of football, and part of his brief was obviously the football side of the club, medical, recruitment, and the academy. So that's his job. So I'll directly report to Dan. And then obviously Dan's been very successful in terms of his time at England and at West Brom. So it'd be naive not to take everything he's got, really, and add to what we're already doing and make us better. So in this short period of time now, I've had obviously a few meetings on the coaching side and what we might change. So as an example, we've changed a little bit about what we do. So instead of really having an assistant and a lead coach and an assistant with all the younger teams, they're both joint, and one will look at in possession, one will look at possession. So it's just a little way of changing a little bit, you know. And obviously, our ultimate aim is to obviously get players through, like you said, into the first team. But that's a slight change at the moment. Do you know what I mean?
So, I mean, obviously, with England, Dan had the thing of the England DNA type programme. Is a similar thing happening at the Albion?
No, not really. In term, we would say that we would have our own DNA already, but I think Dan will add to it. No question about that. And he's already added to it, and he's got good knowledge, and he's got great experience in developing players. And he's great for the academy to have someone above us that's close to the first team as well, and to help the transition into the first team.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I'll just go back to the point you're making about sort of like players going out on loan. Now, you said, you know, each player has something tailored for, you know, what they think will actually be of maximum benefit to them. Like you say, Ben White played for Newport, beat a Premier League side in the FA Cup, didn't they? I think it was them, was it Leicester they knocked out? They had good fun doing so. Now, you're saying that George Cox has gone to play in the Netherlands and a couple of lads have gone to the Bundesliga. What is it about, for instance, their development that necessitates they need to go, say, abroad, as opposed to someone who's going to, as you said earlier, Newport, Peterborough, wherever it is? Is it just something that can be offered in, you know, sort of like the Lowlands or on the continent that can't be offered here? I mean, give us a flavour of that.
The game's slightly different. So if you take George as an example, he's got very, very good technical skills. Very good technical skills. Physically, wouldn't be as big as some Premier League players, but technically, he's excellent.
Okay.
So therefore, that lends itself a little bit. It suits what our Fortuna want to play, and it suits the league that they're playing in at this particular time. So it's a great move for him and to raise his profile. And he's done very well. He played at Ajax the other day in front of 50,000. They beat Feyenoord last weekend. So he's having a great time, and it's a magnificent education for him.
Okay, well, let's have a look at the setup as a whole then. So how many players do you have at the academy at any one time? Is there a maximum capacity, or is there always room for more?
There's Premier League rules that obviously dictates you can't go over a certain amount in certain age groups, but we would be well below that. And generally, we would have quite small squads compared to most. So you're looking at 9s, 10s, 11s, 12s, an average of 16 to 18 players. But 9s and 10s, they'll play two formats, 9v9s, 7v7s. Same with 11s, 12s, and it's not until you go to 13s that it's 11 aside. And again, we would only run... We've probably got the biggest squads we've had in the 13s and 14s at this moment in time. We've around about 18 to 20 players, but then our 15s, 16s, we only run one squad, so we don't have a 15s. Mm. We just have a mixed squad of 15, 16. So the boys we take at 15 playing the 16s a year up, and obviously that benefits them for the year after. And then we obviously look to sign scholars then from under 16s onwards.
Now, obviously, for those sorts of age groups, presumably that most of them are pretty much local, or they have to come from a certain radius.
Yeah, so for the younger ones, there's an hour radius. You've got to live within an hour radius. When you get to 13s up, then you're looking at.
That's on the train. That's only Burgess Hill, isn't it?
So you're looking at 12s up, then you can go to an hour and a half. When you get to scholars, then it opens up Europe-wide until the 31st of October, and we see what Boris decides to do. And then that will affect us. That will affect us quite a bit.
How will it affect you?
Because if we go out with a no deal, then we won't. You won't be able to sign. No one can sign any foreign players. At the moment, there's a special dispensation within the EU where professional clubs can sign players at scholar age, and don't need a work permit. However, if we come out of the EU, that don't apply to us anymore, and you wouldn't be able to sign any foreign players. Only the players that you can get work permits for, which is basically just first team players. Mm. So the flip side of that, English players will get obviously more opportunities, but you will be able to sign players, say from Republic of Ireland. Hopefully in Scotland as well, but it's not quite as simple as that.
Sure. No. I mean, it's the whole thing's an absolute mess.
Well,
anyway,
let's not go too far down. We are really supposedly apolitical on this.
Maybe heads or tails on the 31st. And
Okay, so but obviously, so those younger players. I mean, we're seeing obviously with the likes of Aaron and Stephen making headway this season. Those were players that came in at an older age from other clubs. So. What's the part? Presumably, it's the same sort of halfway for the youngest. But I mean, we've seen the team that went out against Aston Villa.
Hayden Roberts.
Yeah, he's just got off to play for England, and he played 90 minutes this week.
Was he the captain? Wasn't he the England under 18s?
Yeah, he's doing very well at the moment.
Absolutely. Scored a first team goal.
Yeah,
you know, which is more than a lot of that team can do. So actually, well, let's talk about that Villa game. You know, not the right or wrong decision to field so many young players, but it's highly unusual. You know, I mean, it's a lot of people talking about Graham disrespecting the competition, maybe he's disrespecting Aston Villa, but somewhere down the line, he felt that there was room for them to play in the first team. So how does that affect? From them being, sort of under 18, under 20 players, going into the first team and back again. Tell us about how that all sort of kind of works out.
Well, I think that first of all, there was quite a few injuries in the first team during that time. So probably three or four would have played no matter what. But then there was obviously quite a lot of injuries. More of them got an opportunity than probably what everyone would have thought. But as a player, if you're playing in the 18s and you want to try and get in the 23s, or you're playing in the 23s and you want to get in the first team, you've got to be ready for your opportunity. Mm-hmm. You don't know when it's coming. You could turn up one morning for training and be asked to go over to the first team. You've got to be ready. No excuses that you didn't have a sleep last night, or didn't have breakfast, or I didn't have the right dinner, or whatever
the
whole time. No excuses. Right. You've got to be, you try and educate the players to be ready for when your opportunity comes. And for nine of them, their opportunity come against Aston Villa, which is magnificent. And to be fair, they had a good go and got back the 2-1. You think, well, game on, could he take it at penalties? But they've done very well. And it's good for first-team staff and other managers that might contemplate them being on loan, how they handled first-team environment. Mm. And it's brilliant that the fans were really good with them. I think they were excellent with them.
Yeah.
And that got behind them a lot, and it was excellent night all round. And if they could have took it a 2-2, and that would have been the icing on the cake.
I think a lot of people would have been concerned that, you know, with so many youngsters in there, that I mean they did brilliantly, and 3-1 is no disgrace. I mean, clearly the Villa were the better side, but it's not as though they completely overran them and battered them and what have you. But I think there was a fear, certainly from some Albion, they were probably sort of taking their own sort of role as, you know, sort of surrogate dad for the evening, saying, well, hang on, you know, they've got this first team experience. They've been beaten fairly soundly. Is it going to affect them adversely? So the next day, how did the lads sort of all react to it?
No, I think that's where the experience of the 23 staff and the 18 staff that we've got in terms of Simon Rusk, Andrew Croft, Shannon Roof, and all their support staff that go around them. Really, then you've got to try and then, one, take the positives of what happened the night before, and you're on to the next game, wherever that may be, whether they're going off an international duty, whether they're going into the 23s game, or some might be going back, might play in the under-18s. So it's just managing that. And again, everything's a bit different. Everything's different. Everyone's individual, and everyone needs managing in different ways, which is where then not only... We talk about the staff that I've just mentioned. We've got a big support staff, psychologists, S&C staff, medical staff, player care staff, education staff. So there's a lot of people, there's a lot of support around the players. And to try and make it as professional as we can and try and get every little bit of potential out of them so they obviously they fulfil their potential and play at the highest level they can.
Now with, coming back to Alzati and Connolly again, we know that they've been training with the first team for pretty much since Graham came in, and we know the story
Connolly
about
before that. I'm sure.
Well, there he was in and out mostly. Yeah. But I mean, with these guys that was playing against Villa, how often did they get to go and train with the first team lads?
Well, Aaron and Stephen gone over at pre-season, and that was decision to make the move from 23s into the first team. Lock, stock, barrel, they went over, and then obviously decisions to make with some of the other players about going on loan. But to be fair, over the last two or three years, is very few under-18s or very few under-23s that have not trained with the first team. That's always been the case, and being on the same site helps. And the management staff, whether it be Chris's staff or Graham's staff, are very close to the 23 staff, and obviously Dan's addition coming in, we're all close, we're all in the same building, so it makes it easier to transfer players across all the time. And again, the more that they get, the better it is for them, and they can see what level they need to get to, they can see what players that they look up to and what needs to improve in their game, and whether they have move the ball quicker, whatever it might be, and then they take that back into whatever group that they play in then at the weekend.
Okay, I mean, let's have a look at the building then, because I mean there is
the expanding building.
The expanding building. Yeah, Tony's pumping a load more money into it. Yeah. And the academy, it costs what, $5 million a year?
Yeah, roughly
to run?
Just over that. Yeah.
Okay, so ouch. I mean,
it's not a building. It's not a facility that actually can generate its own income in the first place, is it?
No.
Even when the occasional under 23 game being played there with a limited, I think Bayern Munich played there about a year or so ago, and I live not that far from it, and dear God, did they make a racket? But I'm thinking, what is going on here? Yeah. You know, because normally when there's an under 23 game that's open to the limited to the public, you know, it's quite quiet. It's sort of like jolly well done, or it's you know, it's the family and what have you. Bayern Munich, different gravy entirely. Yeah. But yeah. So the point is, yeah, the layout of the building and you know the whole sort of setup and what have you. On what sort of basis do you meet, you know, Dan or Graham or the rest of the staff? I mean, is it kind of an ongoing conversation, or is it just sort of something that's a bit more formal, or you know?
Yeah, a bit of both. We have obviously formal discussions on players all the time, really, in terms of player pathway, what we see that the next few weeks are for them, or the month, or next winter coming up.
This includes things like holistic needs, stuff away from football as well, isn't it?
Yeah, because all the players will have their own individual development plan. So in that, they'll have the coaching side, technical, tactical side, they'll have the social side, they'll have the S&C side.
S&C?
Strength conditioning.
Okay.
They might have medical side if they're injured, or some people are long-term injuries, or it might be... pre-injury work, or do you know what I mean, before training, etc. So then you've got player care side, so the digs, accommodation, bank accounts, etc. for foreign players, driving lessons, all that sort of stuff, that the off-the-pitch stuff that Sue Parris and her team would look after. You've got the psychology side, you've got the admin side, operations, trips, tours. So it's quite a big operation. Like, if I go back 7 years, we had 13 full-time staff. Now we're up to 42 and over 100 part-time staff. So it's quite a big operation now.
Probably the biggest employer in Lansing at this rate, isn't it?
So but it's good. It's exciting. It's
starting
to bear
fruit.
Until
IKEA comes along. So, I mean, it does sound like it. You make it sound like a military operation.
Yeah, it's not so much of a military operation, but it's you've got to have the right process and procedures in place for it to run smoothly. And obviously, we try and improve each year we go, and we're trying to make things better each time. So just the trips of tours alone, we had 17 trips last year, Reading to more than that this year. 95 appearances in the internationals for 15 to 23s last year.
Wow.
We want to try and hit 100 this year. So there's obviously lots going on. There's more going on than you would see in the games, like, you know.
So, well, look, even look at the most basic thing, Jason Malumbi captaining the Ireland under 21s this week. Rather stupidly, as is the sort of befits the logic of the Albion rule, we're recording this while Aaron Connolly is making his full debut for Ireland. We haven't got a clue what's going on. So by the time you listen to this, then we'll know. So we'll know sort of like, you know, Connolly gets substituted after 80 minutes, having scored his fourth goal. In the great scheme of things, we've got sort of like, and we're talking about Malumbi as captain, and we're talking about Hayden Roberts as an England captain and what have you. So when you're talking about the sort of the juniors, is it the fact that we're a Premier League side that actually makes us be noticed for the internationals? You know, we've got this prime academy and therefore... Because I think that a lot of the criticism, certainly over, for instance, Gareth Southgate, is it'll pick players because they play for big sides. Whether that argument holds water or not is another matter. But is there an element of that when it comes to the academy? They see that a very good academy, and therefore the best players from that academy must be the best of their age group. Does it work that way, or am I being a bit disingenuous?
No, it does help, but it depends on what players they're playing against. So if you take Aaron as an example, playing against Tottenham the other day, he's playing against world-class defenders.
And so sticking them on their backside.
And done very well. So it makes the manager's decision, if you're Mick McCarthy or you're Stephen Kenny, it makes your decision a bit easier because now you know that he can perform at that level. Mm-hmm. The hard bit is doing it for the first time if you don't quite know, or you might see it in training, you think, yep, I've seen enough, I'm going to give him a go. That's the hard bit, and that's the brave bit.
But the fact that he got given his Premier League debut away at Manchester City as well, and did very well, and actually could have scored in that game as well, it speaks volumes for him, really. With the setup, like you talked about the education and everything else. Now, obviously, within that education, presumably is social responsibility and being in the newspapers for the right reasons rather than the wrong reasons. So, I mean, how much time is actually spent on it? Because, I mean, obviously, with the likes of social media now, it's so easy to get yourself into trouble.
Yeah, we have a company that look after social media for all the players from 13s upwards. So they're given education on how to use it responsibly, how to be safe. Parents are obviously given education from that as well. So we try and do as much as we can to try and keep the boys safe and to try and use it responsibly and use it in the right way. So it is a big thing, and we do invest a lot of money into a company that looks after their social media side.
You can tell that with the first team, because just about all of them say, "We go again." You think someone must have told them to say that.
Couldn't possibly.
Not the result we're after. Back on Saturday, we go again.
Well, you know,
apart from Shane Duffy, it's we go again.
Well, this is true. But we go again here every week, here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on our podcast, of course, on our...
DAB, we're everywhere, mate.
We are, Spotify.
And if you ask a pigeon very nicely, I'm sure he'll carry it around for you as well.
You know, but you know, if you can't find us, you're not trying hard enough. But as usual, we are brought to you in association with the fabulousoldfootballshirts.com. I don't know how many of John's shirts are on there, but I'm just going to pass this over to you.
For those that have listened for the first time, Phil Shelley, our sponsor, thanks very much, mate, has over 100,000 shirts on his online gallery. And each week he picks out a shirt for... our delectation, usually a revolting one. And we're asking our guest here to describe this. So, John, knock yourself out.
I'm not sure I like this one.
A brandy, purpley, three swords on it, blue, white, camouflage down the sides, round neck collar.
Yeah.
Badge with three swords and jets underneath.
I've got a guest that can describe a shirt properly.
Hyundai sponsor.
Right.
Corolla.
Right. Can you read made the badge? Made by Viva. Has he photoshopped the badge?
Photoshopped the badge. Can't see what the badge says, but it's got jets underneath with three swords in white with a blue background.
Okay, the nature of the swords kind of I don't know if that's what the name of these swords are. It makes me think of something sort of Middle Eastern. But above and beyond that, not a clue. Go on, John. Pick a football club from anywhere in the world, and usually we're talking about some seventh division side from Egypt or something.
I've got no idea.
It does look like it's camouflage. Yeah. It's kind of like Burberry.
And I'm going America somewhere.
Go on, AD. What's Phil got for us this week?
Actually, Australia. Actually. Oh. This is your shirt of the week, it says Phil. This is the 2017 season tribute jersey worn by Newcastle United Jets in the Australian A-League. The name Jets is a reference to the FA-18 Hornet jet fighters, which are stationed at the nearby RAAF Air Base in Williamtown. The base was built in 1941 to provide strategic protection and pilot training during World War II. Once a season for the past 4 years, the Newcastle Jets have worn a tribute shirt to the RAAF with proceeds raised from the sale of the shirts to the RAAF charity. They are generally known as Newcastle Jets and were formed in 1999, and they originally played in the National Soccer League before it was dissolved and became founder members of the A-League in 2004. The home ground is the 33,000 capacity McDonald Jones Stadium, which is owned by the New South Wales government, and they share it with the Newcastle Knights rugby league side. Some UK links for you. Michael Bridges, formerly of Sunderland, Leeds, Newcastle, Bristol City and Hull, was the Jets' top scorer in 2009. And Emil Heskey repeated the feat in 2012-13. There you go. So that is this week's shirt of the week. So there we go. That's that done.
Do you realise the level of anorakism we have on this show?
It's top quality.
As football shirts go, Phil's a great anorak.
Yeah, I know. We've had some really
references.
Good ones over the last 3 weeks. That one, Phil, is minging.
It is minging, actually, Phil. Yeah. I know, I appreciate it.
You wouldn't wear that if someone gave it to you, would you?
No, I mean, fair enough for the Australian RAF for the, you know, and the camouflage bit now makes sense. Yeah. But right. So they're not swords, they're jets. Okay, that's what it is. Okay, I'm looking at it the wrong way round.
Well, I'm sure that the RAAF have a really good recruitment policy, and as do we. And that's where we're going now. I know, it's terrible. So John, how many scouts are there, and how many countries do we have currently?
For the academy,
it's a bit like asking the head of MI6 how many spies they have around the world, isn't it?
For the academy, we'll have around about 40-odd scouts, and then obviously we'll have coaches in the development centres and that as well. So we have 8 centres around Sussex, and then two in London.
So the Irish Times actually named names this week, didn't they, for the fellow you've got in Ireland, and it was someone, wasn't it Paddy McCourt's brother or something?
Yeah, Leroy McCourt's one of our scouts in Ireland, yeah.
Sure, okay, got you. How's that particular pathway work? I mean, is it a case of it goes fed up the chain, or does it someone go straight back to you? How does someone who says, I think we need to have another look at this lad, how does that work?
So what happens is one of the scouts on the ground would flag up a player that they've seen that they've done well. They'd need to go and watch him 2 or 3 times. So they've obviously seen quite a lot of them. Then it gets flagged up to head of recruitment, Dave Wright. And then at that point, then we decide, and obviously if they come in on trial, or in some cases you might not be allowed to have them on trial. So if they're at another club, you won't be allowed to have them at like another English club. You might not get them on trial. So then a senior member of staff has to go and watch them again a couple of times. And then obviously we bring all the reports back in together and then decide then whether we either make an approach to try and sign that player, or if it's based on a trial where ideally you'd want them to come in for a week or 2 weeks. And then during that process, they'll have a psychological report, S&C testing, and they would test them in line with whatever the national average is for that position across the country in a Cat 1. Mm. So we'll have an idea of where they are in terms of S&C work and what their potential would be, more importantly. Medically, they'll get tested, obviously, on coaching and a psychological profile there as well. So we try and build up as much objective data and that as we can to make an objective decision on whether to sign someone or not.
But we are seeing a lot of players coming in from around the world as well. Mm. I mean, obviously, I mean... I think some of them will what we call the Albion buy-to-let scheme is to a certain degree with the likes of and players that we may not have.
Talking about Alexis McAllister, and
Alexis
Percy
McAllister,
Tau,
Percy Tau, which I think they were their first team signings essentially. Yeah. But some of the players that are signed for the academy, they're signed for figures that would have kept us afloat with Dean for the whole tenure there, probably some of them. Yeah. What's the scouting on them? It's a big investment in some of these players.
Yeah, it's a big investment, and it's a similar process if it was come through from first team recruitment staff. Again, it's a similar process. You make you watch them numerous times. There'll be reports made, dossiers made, and then obviously senior staff then would decide, put a value on it of where they. What they would value the player at, and then we decide then whether we'd make approach or whether we try and buy that player.
Okay. So in that case, tell us about the first time you clapped eyes on Aaron Connolly. I know I keep going on about him, but like I say, he is the man of the moment. So
yeah. Well, it would have been he played for the national team at 16, played for Merview, and our scouting teams would have seen him. So in that time, it would have been Mark Anderson and Mark Endon who would be our full-time recruitment staff in Brighton that would have gone over and watched him. We would have known about him and would have known the staff who would obviously taken the teams, and we try and do as much background as we can on players that you're interested in terms of what they're like off the pitch, what their character's like, etc. And then we invited him over for a trial. He played in his first game. He only done all right. He weren't brilliant on his first trial.
How old was he then?
16, under 16. So he'd either been 15 or 16. But on his second time round, done very well. And that's where sometimes when you have someone on trial, they might not do so well, and you would go on really the scouts' reports before that, and they can see him. They might say, listen, he's much better than what we've just seen. So then we invite him again. Mm-hmm. On his second time, done very well. And then obviously we offered him to come to Brighton, and he said yes.
Because when you were in 2 years ago, we were talking about, you know, AD specifically mentioned him, flagged him up, and therefore he'd have only been 17 at the time. And I think you said, you know, he was ready to, not necessarily ready to make the breakthrough, but certainly was knocking on the door. And you said, he possibly would have done, but for the injury. Now, certainly last season, the writing was on the wall, because in Premier League 2, the under 23, he was not only the top scorer, he was, as I understand it, the player of the season as well. Yeah. So his rise, you've seen from, you know, first seeing him at Galway up until now, it must give you a huge amount of satisfaction.
It's brilliant. It's when you work in youth development, that's the best thing, that it's the best feeling you can have, because money can't buy them feelings. When players make their first team debuts or making the senior debuts tonight for the country, score their first goal or the first win or whatever it might be, It's a massive thing, and lots of people have been involved in that. Like you, I've only talked about the staff at Brighton today, but the under 16 staff, Ben Smith, Steve Sidwell, player staff, and below that, 14s, 12s, 11s, 10s, all been involved in some of these players. But then take like someone like Aaron or Stephen, then there's players at their past clubs, staff that have been involved, and since they're under 9, under 10, under 11, family members, etc. So a lot of people involved, and a lot of people take a lot of satisfaction of. When players make their debuts.
Fans, I mean, you know, the late Norwich fans were totally raving about Steve Alzate when he was out there on loan. You know, so you got something special. I mean, Leeds have seen Ben White for the first time.
Yeah.
And the way that they talk about it, you know, with this Argus story that's come up about Liverpool wanting, you know, happy to bid 20 million quid for it, I know you're not in a position to confirm or deny, but I sort of like, you know, would have a large pot of salt to hand as to whether that's true or not. But the point is, Leeds fans are saying, you'll never get him. Hang on a second, you lot. Have you forgotten he's not yours? You know, and we've seen Ben White play, and he seems to sort of sit in comfortably. And the fact he's actually doing brilliant at the top of the championship. I'm probably going to ask you an unfair question, but what does that mean for his future, knowing full well that he is now basically on the radar?
Well, he's obviously a signed player at Brighton, and it will come to the January window or the summer window when they decide what's best for him next. And hopefully comes into our first team at some point, you know. But if that don't happen, then there's obviously a decision to make whether he comes good enough for our first team, or he might be sold or go elsewhere on loan.
The thing is, we're very, very, very good at bringing through defenders. We're great at that. It's just the other. Yeah.
This is Aaron Connolly coming through. I think it's such a breath of fresh air because he's actually a striker. Mm. You know, I think probably the last person that wasn't the defender was probably Jake Forster-Caskett. I probably am wrong, but you know,
Solly March,
absolutely. So. Yeah, sorry, over to you, Eddie.
Yeah, so, we're talking about the success of Aaron and Stephen Elzatti and stuff at the moment, but for every success story, there's players that fall the other side. So tell us what happens there, and is there a care, aftercare system for one of the phrase?
Yeah, there's no easy way of doing that, none. And especially the players and families that have been at the club for a long while. And obviously, if it comes to an end, we try and educate the parents before any decisions are made of how it's made, and obviously the reasoning going into it, whether it might come across, or all of them departments would have a say on it. But also you take a view of from recruitment where players might be coming in them positions from different areas or different clubs, so there is a it's a big decision when they're made, but you try and be You try and do it in the nicest way possible, if there is such a thing. But having known from my own son being released, it has a big effect on them. And you hope then over in the next couple of weeks that they get back into football and they find a level that suits them, and the smile gets back on their face, you know. But there's no easy way of doing it, and it's the worst part of the job by a mile, and I think all the staff would say that. But something that we would want to try and encourage is any of the players that they might go and they'll want to find their way in football first in the first couple of years, which is fine, but we would love a point or love a time when they come back round, either as coaches or analysts or physios, because there's a lot of opportunity now in the football industry, and we'd love them players to come back round, whether they've been with us for a couple of years or they've been with us for 10 years. So that's something that we're trying to do.
Does it fall to you to offload the bad news? Or
sometimes, and sometimes it'll be down to the lead phase staff, and it's done in a way whereby, firstly, we'll let them know what decision date is coming. Depends on the ages. It's done slightly different with different ages, but they'll know when decision time's coming. And then if it's 16s down, they'll get an email with everything in it, and then we'll have a meeting 2 weeks later. But it's all pre-done. They know exactly when it's coming, how it's going to be done, etc. And the reason why we do it that way is takes the emotions out. If you have a meeting, because some people say, I want to be told face to face. Well, dad might, mum might, but 100% the player would know really where he's like. There's only a few times where it might be 50-50 where he's not quite sure that'd be a tough decision. So soon, if you, for instance, got a player in the room and you're going to say that you're going to be releasing your time's up. Meeting over. It's take 10 seconds, finished. So there's nothing more to be said because it's too emotional. But obviously the reason we do it that way, and then 2 weeks later we come back and then plan what's next for the player. Might be trial somewhere else. So quite a lot of our 16s last year all got trials at different clubs and got scholarships, which is brilliant. Or we're trying, might be into further education or into employment in some way. We'll help them as much as we can to do that.
Now, when you've got sort of kids football, you see it playing in the park, and it's not uncommon where you've got pushy parents on the outside yelling grief and what have you. Now, obviously, every parent wants their child to do well. They want to be the success. And sometimes some parents take it too far and actually try and live their life through that child.
Yeah.
So does that mean that also not only do you have your education progression of programs for each and every person, do you actually include the parents in that? So you're almost educating the parents of their son or daughter to say these are the expectations you need to manage, kind of thing.
We would have a series of evenings run by Sarah Murray, our psychologist, who would do performance parenting. So we do special sessions for parents of elite players. So, as an example, one of the rules that we have and we set down at the start of the season is by all means encourage the players and encourage other boys as well. Never ever shout any instructions out whatsoever. Mm. None. The last thing the players want is the coaches showing, want them to do something and someone else telling them to boot it up the pitch and you're trying to play out. Do you know what I mean? So they're respectful and we've got a good set of parents, but we work hard with it and we try and educate them as much as we can, but also being honest of what we're trying to do and try and involve them in it.
It's almost counterintuitive, I'd imagine, for a parent not to bellow out, isn't it?
Yeah. The hard thing is if you're getting beat. If they're getting beat heavily and they're struggling, and sometimes you might hear one.
Double sung it, stuck in.
Or change what you're doing. But I think by involving the parents, involving the players, what you're trying to do on the long term, in the big picture, I think that helps when you obviously involve them in everything.
Sure. You know, it's like my daughter, she was playing football the other day and she scored and celebrated. Unfortunately, it was in her own goal, but she celebrated anyway. It was great.
Yeah. And what did Dad say from the side then?
Unfortunately, I wasn't there. But
but you'd have bellowed.
Yeah. But I mean, is it still a thing? I mean, you used to sing, oh, I got released because I was too small or my build wasn't quite this, that, or whatever. Is that still a thing?
It can be. It can be. You might not be able to. You're looking to someone to go from 16 to 18 to 23 to first team, and you've got to be able to provide what that player needs at that particular time. If you can't provide it, they might be better off going somewhere else where they might be able to provide it. Or they might not be quite at the level that you want them to be, and therefore they might have to go somewhere else. Mm. Or in a case where we've got a case this year where someone's physically quite small, they're not quite ready for under 18 football. So therefore we'll say to the parents, listen, what we would like to do is technically he's very good. He's very good off the pitch, great attitude. And we feel that once he does grow, he might stand a chance. So for the first year, we're going to play him down in the under-16s. So that's something a little bit different. But if you can, you've got to get permission from the Premier League, but you can do that. Because only under-18s and 23s are playing leagues, 16s down don't play in leagues. So you, as long as you get permission, yeah. Sure. I wouldn't be able to do that with 10 players, but it's a special
The odd
place.
Lad that hasn't grown yet.
So, okay, but let's move on. I mean, we talked briefly about the loans and everything and some of the players we've got out at the moment. But how do you decide what is the right level in the pyramid for a player to go to help their development?
I think it's a 23 staff, Dan, myself, David Weir, he's in charge of the loans. I think we'd all sit down really and go through what the player needs. So an example would have been Ben when he went to Newport with Mike Flynn. One of the things he needs to develop, he needs to be better in the air and he needs to develop his aerial ability. So obviously when you discuss that then with the manager, that these are the things that they'd want him to develop, then they'd work on that as well. And he was brilliant with him, he was excellent with him. And he done really well.
Is it going to be playing first team football that actually makes him do that? Because you think, well, why could he have not sort of trained that skill here? Is it actually specifically going out and playing first team football that skill?
Yeah, and it's a different environment. And I think if you play in League Two and you're a centre half,
you're going to be aerial.
You're playing against journeymen, really, as well, aren't you? Yeah. Players who know all the tricks and
because sometimes the under 23 league gets a bit of a battering off certain pundits or whatever, but technically and tactically it's excellent. It's an excellent league and would prepare them for Premier League in the technical and tactical side. Physical side, it's not like playing in the first team. And the environment of having 20, 30,000 fans, 6,000 fans, you don't get that. So that's why some players might have to go out and loan and some don't. It suits them. You might want them to go out alone to learn something different. Like it's great for some of our young players to go and play at Worthing or at Bognor.
I've been seeing
Eastbourne.
A lot of Rocco Reece.
Yeah, so it's great for them. Like the bank holiday when Worthing played Bognor,
1,800 people.
Yeah, that was great for them.
That was good fun actually.
So it's a great experience for them, and you learn a lot about them. So it's excellent, and then it can come back in.
Absolutely,
he was terrific as well. Actually. He's gone. Carl Rush was out there Worthing now, but there's a few other people. I mean, for those guys, so you think that going to Tier 7 is the right thing for their development
at that particular time? Yeah,
right. Okay.
Oh, that's interesting. It's kind of interesting when you talk about a given player. You know, we say at the top of the show we're talking about George Cox at Fortuna Sittard. You think, that seems a bit random, and then you realise that actually, that's because that will suit his skill set.
I mean, is there a structure to a loan deal as well? You send someone there, and is there you say we want them to have X amount of minutes or play X amount of games?
Can you have an influence
in
manager?
In an ideal world, you can. Don't always work like that, but you could structure it whereby a smaller club would pay less money if they play. So you can structure it like that, and that's how they would benefit. But you would hope that when we're obviously structuring a deal or structuring a loan, that a key thing is the manager knows them already and they've watched them and they've studied them and they think, yeah, do you know what? This player will suit our team, rather than going in blind. Then you're halfway there, really. And if someone wants someone, then it means so much more, and you'll have more of a trust that they're going to play.
Because Aaron went out to Luton last year. He didn't really work for him. I mean, it was a side that was already successful, and it was always going to be a big ask for him to get into that team once he got fit again. Because he was meant to go in January, wasn't he?
But he got injured, and he went for the last month and was fit for the last two or three games. But they're going for the title. But even that month there, it would be beneficial for him. And working under Mick Hartford and being a part of a promotion push and a league winning team, it'd pick up certain things there would be vital to his education.
I mean, Steve Alzati, he was out at Swindon last year, wasn't he? I mean,
was it Swindon or Leighton Orient?
Swindon.
He came from
Leighton Orient.
But the thing is, you're looking at it, and we must still, because like I say, I mean, in the 2 years that you've been. Since you've been here, then obviously, you know, we have had a little bit of a sea change of attitude here, rightly or wrongly, about sort of players coming through. And now we can see sort of like the fruits of yours, and obviously you're talking everyone else, but the fruits of your labour here. And we must obviously talk about Aaron Connolly, because, like I say, he is the man of the moment. Mm. Now, his rise hasn't just been sort of like the 2 years since we're talking about here. His rise has been meteoric over the last 10 days. Makes his Premier League debut, turns over, you know, a pretty decent defence. Who admittedly would take advantage of them because they're actually not playing that great. That is enough to actually encourage Mick McCarthy to take him into the, you know, straight from the under 21s into the first team and into then starting.
Well, I was still thinking about Barney Roney's description of Aldevaro. I can't even say his name. Aldevaro.
Toby.
I mentioned this in the show last week, but I'm going to repeat it again because it made me laugh. He described him as being similar to a decommissioned council combine harvester.
No, sorry. So we've gone from those, you know, that 10 days ago where he wasn't, you know, hadn't even started, to someone with the experience and the knowledge and the you know, the expertise of Alan Shearer actually singing his praises.
Yeah.
You know, so what is his, in your opinion, his trajectory line from here on in? I mean, obviously he's not the finished article. So no. Does he still come back to you now and again?
He's moved to the first team now, full time. Mm-hmm. So he'd be in the first team. So obviously the first team staff, and Bruno would be a big influence in terms of looking after him as well as the first team. So even between him and he'll report back to obviously Simon. But now he's in with the first team. So that's part of Bruno's job, is to obviously nurture and just keep an eye on some of the younger players, which you can't have no one better to look after you.
Absolutely. So long as he understands and appreciates that Bruno is a demigod.
Yeah. they could exchange haircare products, can't they?
I think it's important that you just want to keep learning.
Yeah.
I think when the day comes when he thinks he don't, any player that they can't learn anymore, I think that you start to plateau, but as long as he wants to keep learning, keep achieving, keep aiming high and keep wanting to get better, I think he'll keep on getting better.
This is surely where the likes of Glenn Murray comes in as well, isn't it?
Yeah, there's certain, we've got a great set of senior players. I think it was great to watch him at Bristol Rovers, and watching them coming off the pitch together, and you can obviously see they've got a good relationship, and
he's helping his dad, isn't he?
Helping him loads, and I'm sure there's others in there that does the same thing. But that's vital for their education, vital for them, and it's vital that you've got a good set of strong personalities in the change room that would help him in the right way.
Okay, well let's just move it on now to competitions. So what is your thoughts on the current structure of academy football? I like the under 18 Premier League, under 23s, leasing.com trophy. I mean there's all sorts of different competitions is it right? Could it be changed?
At the moment it's probably the best it's been. And what I mean by that is you've got league games, we're playing Division 1, done really well to get promoted from Division 2 into 1. They're very high-level games. You play at a lot of stadiums in the Premier League in them games. It's a great experience for the players. Technically and tactically, it's very high-level. Then on top of that, because we obviously got promoted into Division 1, we're playing in the International Cup. We had great games last year.
Who've we got this year?
Wolfsburg, Valencia.
Not rubbish then.
Yeah.
So. Is Vicente back at? He's back at Valencia, isn't he?
He's back in Spain somewhere.
I know he left, but he.
I know as a coach. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That'd be interesting.
But so, they've had a bit of a coup d'état there. There's all things going.
So you add that to the league program, which is obviously a good level, and then on top of that, obviously you have the old check of trade tournament.
So leasing.com to be
leasing.com. So and that's brilliant for them. And when you play like so we played Southend, played Wimbledon, and the boys have done well and they've won both them games. And then obviously we look forward to Orient for the next game. But they're the good ones as well as that, because that brings in that physical side. You're playing against pros, and if you're a manager in the stand, you can then see them against other senior pros, and that's a great tournament. If you could replicate more of that, then I think that would be.
But there is a lot of criticism on that tournament, not least from me, to be honest. I'm not a fan. It's a competition which I thought, obviously, with us being our trajectory from being with Dean and playing the lower leagues, that was that competition for us. It was. I used to love the LDV or whatever it was called back then.
Yeah, and it should have been a competition for them, but let's face it. I mean, the EFL have thrown us in their desperation, and you know what a fan of Sean Harvey we are on the show, but in their desperation, in order to try and attract sponsorship and try and attract, then it's had the adverse effects. But the point is that the bizarre thing is that the clubs themselves are going to be struggling on the back of it, but the Albion are probably one of the sort of like the few beneficiaries from it because of the under-23s and the pathways and what have you. And we saw an inkling of... I mean, 12,000 people saw an inkling of the pathway, but by watching the Villa game, yes, we lost, but you saw that we weren't rubbish, you know. I mean, it clearly wasn't potable, but you could see that these players adapted and applied them, some better than others. Mm. But you get an idea. Everyone got an idea. I mean, I don't, as I said on the show before, I have no time for those who said, oh, you know, this is terrible. You know, we've got all these kids here. If I'd have known, I wouldn't have paid. And I'm thinking, well, you know, this is still the first team and you've withdrawn your support. You know, imagine if they did that, you know, for you. So, come on, this is always a two-way street. But the point is that a lot of people have seen the future of the Albion. And it really didn't look that bad at all.
Well, people came away with a new favourite player, and mostly quite a lot of different players.
Yeah. But it's a big plus, and you think them players, no matter what they go on to achieve, remember that night forever.
Hayden Roberts for one, especially.
100%, and especially everyone that went to that game, there was a part of that. And some of them might never play for the first team again, and some might go on to great things. Mm. But no matter what, and some things that people forget is that. There's hundreds of games and thousands of training sessions have gone before that game at Villa, and they've suddenly got a chance, and some of them done really, really well, and they're brilliant for them.
It's not even just thousands of training sessions; it's also hundreds of hours that've been put into holistic social care as well. Yeah. You know, for all those. No, I know it sounds a bit of a naff thing, but you've got to have that kind of pastoral care in order to actually make the player that. Yeah. You know, they've got to have that right attitude, and we're back to Matty Ryan's. You know what's its policy.
I don't expect you to name names on this one. So you can keep this.
And don't
yourself.
Ask him.
But has after that game, has Graham come and had a chat with you and said, right, X, Y, Z?
Did anyone stop Rice on the back of that game?
I think they would have. Before the game, you would have a little inkling, right? You'd be. Weren't sure how everyone would do, because there was obviously nine going in, and then you see the Villa team sheet, and it's not a bad side.
It was a really good side to put out.
But yeah, then some of them then done very well, and as a group, we'd been really proud of them of how they played, and then that experience then takes them on, and hopefully then they might. Some of them will get training sessions in the first team, or move. Some of them will go from the 18s to the 23s, and then that'll then be a part of their journey going forward. And this, what they learnt that night, it obviously throws them forward even quicker, and it gives them valuable experience for their second appearance. Mm. And it just goes on and on and on.
Okay. I was going to say my abiding memory of actually of all the things that have gone on, and bearing in mind he hadn't made a Premier League start. Was Aaron Connolly smashing the crossbar, and that crossbar was buzzing and vibrating like a, you know, the top string of a guitar for a good sort of, you know, few seconds. It's still shaking. Yeah.
But look, well, obviously, with Aston Villa coming this weekend as well, it's.
I don't think Aston Villa would have learned anything about
that us from about that game, us. No.
But I think we could have learned a few things from them. Yeah. Okay. So, you know,
so it's interesting Villa because we got the young players are going up to the Villa game, so we've got our 11s, 12s, 13s, 10s, 11s, 12s, 13s going up to Aston Villa to go to the game. Stay over in Manchester, play Man City in the morning, and come back. So, hopefully,
Did you kind of get the word from the Villa people as to sort of like how they thought that the kids had got on? Because obviously, you sort of swap notes and you say, you know, any word from them?
No, not really. Okay. Not really. You wouldn't speak about. Okay. But I think there'd be some of the young players that would have done well in that game.
Sure. Okay, well, we are coming to the end now. So what next for the academy? What changes would you like to see? And do you think we will see any more players come through before the end of the season?
Hopefully, yeah. I just want to keep it going and hopefully we get better each year and we keep evolving. Players out on loan to do well when they come back in the summer, push for a place in the first team. If they don't, and they go on to bigger and better things, great, or bigger things, or if they play in the first team, great. That's their ultimate aim. But if they don't, and they can secure a living playing professional football, that's a success as well. Like it would be if people go into employment or higher education as well. Mm. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it would seem that out of the current academy, it seems that the next in line is Tudor Baluta, who's been named.
That's
on the
bench. Your opinion. You said this last.
Well, he's the one that's been on the bench the last three games. So. I mean,
you're now asking John to name names here, and you said you weren't going to, didn't you?
He's got himself in the squad, match day squad.
Yeah, sure.
So, I mean, is there any changes that you would like to see in the? I mean, I mentioned the current structure of the academy and of the leagues and everything else. Is there anything you would like to see them do?
I think. Listen, we would like to go at the Checker Trade, obviously tournament, or the leasing.com. Tournament
is Enver Hodge Memorial Teapot, as Attila called it.
That's good, but I think as we have it now, I think we'd be quite happy with it if you said it's going to be like that for the next couple of years in terms of how we operate and what the tournaments that we play in. And something we haven't mentioned is the tournaments that they're going, like as an example, that a mixed 14-15 team were in Valencia at the weekend playing the tournament. Ben Smith and Steve Sidwell took them there, and they played Levante, played a team from Mahiti, played Barcelona, played GPS. So it's a great experience for them. Great. Mm-hmm. And we do that all the way through from under-9s up to under-23. So it's
not
a great
fair,
experience.
Is it? Well, this is one of the downsides of being rubbish at football, isn't it?
Well, you can take me next time. I'll do it. But is it too late for me?
Yeah, a little bit. I think.
You're 40, 46?
Yeah, something like that.
You're even older than Glenn Murray.
I know.
And that's saying something.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. On that note...
Well, John, this has been brilliant. It's been such an education. I think that, you know, because we're now finally seeing, that, like I say, the fruits of your labour coming through, you know, obviously you can't deny, you know, no one can deny there's been a sea change. You know, you don't want to sort of like have to compare and contrast. Mm. We can just see it all ourselves. But it's been such an education as to how it works. Mm. And, you know, the future does look very rosy, you know, in terms of, you know, the pathways and the kids coming through and the fact that they're actually all doing very well at their particular age level. And it, obviously we know it's a massive leap between the under-23s and the Premier League. And we know that Aaron Connolly is, you know, has made that leap, and he is kind of the, I guess, like I say, the one who the other ones have to aspire to. But thanks very much indeed for coming in.
No, pleasure. You know, pleasure.
I've been highly educated. And for those who have been hearing sniffles, I want to sort of thank John's daughter, Katie, who's in the studio here, for her total patience. And thanks very much indeed for coming in, John.
Pleasure.
I don't mind the guys dancing with my girl. That's fine. I know them all pretty well. Sometimes I feel I gotta get away.
you're all right.